Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
For most of church history and until modern times, all Christian traditions confessed the doctrine of divine simplicity. Now, by simple, they did not mean to say that God is modest or unassuming or dense, but rather that God is ontologically simple, or simple in his being. Or, to state the doctrine negatively, God is not composed of parts. A part is anything in a subject, such as an entity, a property, or a principle, that is less than the whole, and which contributes to the being of the whole. Parts are more metaphysically basic and ontologically prior to their wholes. Parts are, in this sense, more fundamental than the whole. Parts constitute or compose their wholes, and without the parts, wholes would be really different than they are. Now, most people have no trouble with the idea that God is without physical parts. God is spirit and immaterial, and as such, lacks any dimensive quantity and is not extended in space. Unlike physical, corporeal beings, which have parts outside of parts that are at least potentially divisible indefinitely, God is incorporeal and thus whole and indivisible. But the doctrine of divine simplicity, as classically and traditionally understood, does not just deny physical parts to God. It denies any parts to God, including metaphysical parts. Metaphysical parts are those real, ontologically deep, non-physical constituent principles of being, such as substance and accident, form and matter, essence and existence, and act and potency. It also denies logical parts to God. Logical parts refer to conceptual distinctions we make among beings, such as the organization of things into genus and species. According to the doctrine of divine simplicity, God is utterly uncomposed and without parts of any kind. What is it that motivates the doctrine of divine simplicity? Why is it so important that we deny that God is composed of parts? Well, the rationale for the doctrine of divine simplicity can be simply put: composed beings are dependent beings. Another way to say the same thing is this: composed beings are caused beings. But as we saw in a previous episode on divine aseity, God is absolutely independent and uncaused. Moreover, composed beings are contingent beings. But again, as we saw last time, God is not a contingent being, but a necessary being. There are two ways in which a composite being is ontologically dependent. First, a composite being is dependent on its parts. A composite is less fundamental than its parts, insofar as the existence of the composite presupposes both the existence of the parts and the order or arrangement of the parts. In other words, for a composite being to exist, its parts must exist and must be put together in the right way. Wholes cannot exist without their parts arranged in the proper way. In addition to being dependent on its parts, a composite being is also dependent on a composer of its parts. The principle here is that whatever is composed has a cause. Composite beings are thus caused beings. This principle is self-evident when you think about it. A composite thing cannot be the cause of its own parts since, as we've noted, it depends on its parts and their arrangement for its very existence. Suggesting that a composite could be the cause of its own parts is therefore to enter into a vicious explanatory circle, where the whole causes the parts, and the parts cause the whole. Such a thing would be, in effect, lifting itself up by its own metaphysical bootstraps, an incoherent notion, to be sure. It's important to see that the dependence relationship between a composite and its parts is atemporal. That is to say, that a composite is dependent on its parts, even if it never comes into existence, even if, that is, the composite being in question has always existed. Even an everlasting composite being would still be dependent both on its parts and on an external composer of its parts at every moment that it exists. In this sense, time is irrelevant in the part-to-whole relation. Composites are ontologically dependent on their parts, even if not temporally dependent. Composite beings are thus doubly dependent, first on their parts, and second on the composer of their parts. If God were a composite being, then, he could not be the absolute being, or the sole ultimate reality, since he would depend on principles and causes of being that are really distinct from and fundamentally prior to himself. But nothing can possibly be more metaphysically basic and foundational than God, since only that which is ontologically uncomposed can be ontologically independent. God must be absolutely simple. Indeed, an absolutely simple being not only needs no cause, but cannot even in principle be the kind of thing that could have a cause. In this way, the doctrine of divine simplicity and the doctrine of divine aseity are really just two sides of the same coin. Up to this point, we've spoken of simplicity as a piece of negative theology. That is, we've been denying something about God, namely that he's not composed of parts. But the doctrine of divine simplicity can also be considered as predicating something positive about the divine nature. Understood affirmatively, to say that God is simple is to say that all that is in God is God. Everything in God just is the one indivisible divine essence. Again, we can see the close link here between aseity and simplicity. As we saw in the episode on divine aseity, God's self-existence is explained by his being purely actual or pure act and devoid of any potency. But as was just explained, the whole that is constituted by its parts is merely potential until actualized by some principle which combines the parts. Something composed of parts requires a cause to actualize the potential unity of those parts. Parts entail potency. Composed beings are potential beings. Only a non-composite being, then, can be completely devoid of potency. Thus, as pure act, God must be absolutely simple. Again, we saw last time that since existence is the act of all acts, to say that God is pure act is to say that God is pure being, or being itself, or existence itself subsisting. This too demands that God be absolutely simple, since there cannot be in God a distinction between what he is and that by which he is, or between God's essence and his existence. To be God is simply to be. Because all that is in God is God, because there is nothing in God that is not identical with the divine nature itself, we're forced to say some things about God that sound really weird to us, that sound really odd. For example, because God is simple, we must say that each of God's attributes are identical with his essence. Unlike creatures, God doesn't have attributes. Rather, he is his attributes. So, for example, God does not have wisdom. God is wisdom. God does not have love. God is love, and so on. Moreover, because God is simple, each of God's attributes are identical with each other. Although wisdom and love refer to properties that are really distinct in creatures, in God, they refer to the same one simple divine essence, and are thus not really distinct properties in God. But how can this be? How can properties that clearly have different meanings, such as wisdom and love, be identical in God? Well, here it's absolutely critical to keep in mind the inadequacy of our thought and our language when it comes to thinking and speaking about the transcendent God. Both our concepts and the language that we use to express them are drawn from the created world and exist in us in a mode that's proper to finite beings. That is to say, that we think and predicate of God according to our creaturely mode of being and our creaturely mode of knowing. There is a sense, then, in which our concepts will always and necessarily fail and fall short of circumscribing and comprehending God's infinite being. So our concepts and our words do not capture the way that God is in himself, but only the way in which we as creatures must think about God. Although the properties that we attribute to God are not identical with each other as we conceive them, what they refer to is the same in God. An analogy, I think, can help here. God as he is in himself can be imagined as pure white light, utterly simple, undivided, and containing in unity all the colors of perfection. In God, there are no distinct attributes. His goodness is his wisdom, his justice, his power, and so on. Our finite intellects are like a prism. When the pure white light passes through, it refracts into different colors. Each color represents a concept of God that we conceive of, goodness, wisdom, justice, and so on. The multiplicity of names we give to God and attributes we predicate of God correspond to the colors we perceive. Each name or concept expresses a real aspect of the one divine reality. But no single name or concept, or even all of them together, exhausts the fullness of God's essence. So, just as refracted colors are distinct to us, yet identical in the one white light, our many attributions to God are distinct in conception, but identical in God's utterly simple essence. It should not really surprise us that our thought and language limps when it comes to God. It should not surprise us that there are things about God that seem really odd and strange to us. After all, God is entirely unlike anything in the created order. The doctrine of divine simplicity underscores in a vivid way the fundamental otherness and transcendence of God. Ontological simplicity provides a clear metaphysical dividing line between the Creator and his creation, whereas every creature is an ontological composite and therefore has dependent and limited being. God alone is ontologically simple and therefore independent and unlimited in being. So simplicity reminds us that God is not just another being among beings. The difference between God and creatures is not a matter of degree. God does not exist on a continuum with other things. Divine simplicity is also the fundamental ground for God's unity. According to the doctrine of divine unity, God is absolutely one and utterly unique. The oneness of God's being is entailed from the fact that God is not composed of parts. Since he has no parts, he cannot even in principle be divided in his being. God is unique in the sense that he is the one and only one. God is not one of a kind. He's not an individual member of the class deity, not even the sole member of a possible pantheon of gods. For God to be a member or instance of a class or kind would require that there be some distinct metaphysical feature or part in God that could distinguish him as an individual within the class or kind to which he belongs. But since there can be no such distinguishing parts in God, God must be uniquely unique. The doctrine of divine simplicity thus secures a principled monotheism. It's not just that there happens to be one God, but rather that it is strictly impossible that there be more than one God. There can be but one being whose essence and existence are identical, and this for the same reason noted already. A being who is subsistent existence itself is absolutely uncomposed and unlimited. To suppose two such beings would require some differentiating factor or feature, but any differentiation would introduce composition, limitation, lack, and potency, all elements that contradict the very notion of subsistent being itself. It's not hard to see why the doctrine of divine simplicity has been confessed by virtually all the greatest theologians and philosophers until modern times. For most of church history, divine simplicity and divine ultimacy have gone hand in hand. Of course, there's more to say here, much more. Christians may wonder, for example, how the doctrine of simplicity can be reconciled with the doctrine of the Trinity. Now, this is an important question, and one that has been addressed many times over throughout church history. Suffice it to say that what simplicity strictly rules out is composition in God, but not necessarily distinction in God. Classical formulations of the Trinity that appeal to distinctions rather than to composition do not run afoul of divine simplicity. But that's the subject of another episode, and I'll include a link to that episode in the description of this video.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.